I want this country to realize that we stand on the edge of oblivion. I want every man, woman, and child to understand how close we are to chaos. I want everyone to remember why they need us.
Welcome back, everybody, to Milkshakes, Markets, Madness. If you're new to the show, welcome. We have a ton of playlists on the channel homepage, which will help you, I guess, drink from the fire hose slowly but surely. If you're unfamiliar with what the milkshakes, the reason for the name milkshakes in the show title is the dollar milkshake theory is something my friend here, Brent Johnson, came up with. We encourage you to go down that rabbit hole and learn a little bit more. We have a Start Here playlist, which will help you do that. The idea is that as the system starts to kind of age, credit builds on itself, eventually before it ends, both the dollar and gold will rise together. He uses some fun movie analogies. The milkshake part of it comes from the infamous milkshake scene in There Will Be Blood. So if you are old and somewhat familiar with the show, welcome back. This is going to be the second of a new segment that we're doing. WWJD, what would Johnson do? All of our videos have a unique objective. We don't just post the same stuff multiple times a week. We do have a long form video we post on the weekend. We do a Monday peak of the week. Each segment tries to kind of bring a different type of conversation to the table. This one's a fun one, mostly because we get to present Brent with kind of, I guess, a fairy tale question and see how he responds. So I'm curious, Brent, if in a 12-month period, if you had to either wear a Hitler mustache or have your eyebrows shaved, which one would you do?
I mean, no, there's no question. That's easy. I shave my eyebrows, man. You just can't go walking around with a Hitler mustache.
Jordan pulled it off for a little bit.
That's true. I don't know. Yeah, well, he's Michael Jordan. He can get away with it. I can't.
Okay, well, in all seriousness, the question we want to look at here, and it's somewhat, there's a transition because central bankers, in a lot of ways in the monetary world, might be considered on par with Hitler. So what we want to get your thoughts on are, if you were given control of the Federal Reserve and U.S. monetary policy, what would be the first thing you would do? Would you implement a gold standard? How would you do it? Overall, you know, give us kind of a walkthrough if you were suddenly given that immense power, how you would approach your job.
Okay, so it's actually a really good question. It's really kind of a philosophical question. So the first thing I would say is if I am me and I have my own beliefs, I would probably institute something that would end up getting me fired rather quickly. And I'll tell you what that is. I would have a different answer if I actually wanted to keep my job as, you know, Fed chair or whatever it is. I would do something completely different. I would not want to be the chairman of the Fed. It's not the job I aspire to or would want any part of. Partly because I don't think that needs to exist in the first place, and so that's what I would do. I would, you know, I think the classic line is that if I was appointed the head of the Fed, what would I do? And that is resign, right? I think Jim Grant kind of popularized that idea. I wouldn't necessarily resign, but I would probably start making a number of decisions that would get me fired very quickly. And what I would like to see the most is I would just remove the legal tender laws that mandated that the U.S. dollar be money. And that have to be used. And I would open it up to competition. You know, people would be allowed to use different kinds of money, and whether it was gold or whether banks could issue their own money or whether, you know, towns and cities or groups of people could issue their own types of tokens. I would just let the market figure it out. I'm a free market guy. I think the free market is much more efficient and much more intelligent and much more rational than 12 PhDs sitting in a room deciding what money should be and what the price of it should be. And so that's where I would go. Now, my guess is that would lead to some type of a harder monetary standard, whether it would be a gold standard or something else. I don't know. I tend to believe it would be a gold standard. But here's the thing. If you're a free market person, you should not just institute a gold standard, because then you are declaring via fiat that gold is now money. Now, I happen to believe that the market would choose money anyway, but I don't think the politicians should declare what money is. I think that in my perfect world, the market would choose what money is. Now, I think the market would settle on gold, But if it settled on something else, then that would be fine with me as well. Now, I said at the beginning that this would get me fired rather quickly. And it is true. You know, as I think that a lot of people don't realize that even in the periods in the past when gold was money, and when I say was, you know, some people say gold has always been money, and every now and then they come in and they use paper currency or fiat currency, but it isn't really money. But when I say when gold was officially money, if that's the official, you know, currency of the realm, so to speak, even when that was the case, it was still via fiat. In other words, it was money because the governor or the warlord or the president, whoever is, you know, that government declared that gold was money. So in those cases, I happen to think that fiat money and, you know, free market money kind of coincided and had a singularity. But that might not always be the case. And so, again, that's why I would not declare a gold standard, because I don't think that would last either. Because here, I'll give you an example. If we were to come out and say the U.S. government is now on a gold standard and we stand ready to purchase gold at $15,000 an ounce, and you can convert your dollars to gold for $15,000 an ounce. Again, that's not a free market decision. That's a decision by the government that says we're pegging our currency to gold at 15,000. And I think eventually currency pegs break. And, you know, this is exactly why, you know, the U.S. left the gold standard back in 1971, is because they had it pegged to $35. That was the wrong price. And as market pressures went against it, they didn't want to give up their gold. And so the currency peg eventually broke. So it's be the same thing now. And this is the one thing that I kind of find funny with people in the gold world, is they hate fiat currency, but they would love if tomorrow the government came out and mandated that everybody use gold as money, right? Because it's kind of like, you know, when you get to politics and liberty, right? Do people really want real liberty, or do they just want their own enforcer in power, right? Most people just want their own guy in power. And that's kind of how I feel it is with the gold standard. You know, gold advocates are oftentimes free market people and hate price manipulation. Unless the government were to mandate that everybody use gold as money, then they'd love it, right? And so I would probably prefer to stay away from that. I would want the market to decide. I personally would prefer probably something closer to a gold standard, or at least some form of handcuffs on the government that didn't allow them to spend the way that they do. But again, I would go down the free market road and just let the market figure it out. The market's much smarter than I am, so I would go that route.
Do you want to add a little bit more in terms of if you had a kind of, I guess, play by their rules? I mean, I think the whole process to somebody even like a Jerome Powell becoming Fed chairman, I think before, you know, there was a changing of the guard and Janet Yellen was on the way out. I don't really know if anyone knew who Jerome Powell was, you know, so what's kind of the process leading up to that journey? And then, you know, you mentioned as you started kind of giving your view on things that your take would get you fired. How would you kind of fit into their model and still, I guess, somewhat be true to your values?
It'd be pretty hard. I suppose if I got put into the role and they said, you know, if you don't manage it, you know, in the spirit with which we've put you in there, you know, somebody on the other side of the world gets a bullet in the head, you know, and I had to do it within their framework, that would be much more difficult, right? And from that perspective, probably what I would try to do, if I had to play within their rules, is I would probably try to figure out a way to deal with all the outstanding debt. And so we've got to figure out a way to reset the system and clear out all the bad debt. Until all the bad debts that are now all over the world, until those get extinguished, either by jet jubilee or a crash or whatever it is, until that gets extinguished, we're going to have, you know, this very sluggish growth, and we're going to have these crises pop up every, I don't know, 12 to 24 to 36 months. And I really believe that. And I think the half-life of time between crises is getting shorter and shorter because of all this debt. So you have to settle the debt somehow. One thing that maybe I would try to do, and I've thought about the problem, this has many, many challenges with it. But one thing that could potentially be done is that the bonds that are sitting on central bank balance sheets around the world could just be forgiven. In other words, the central banks say that to the governments, you don't have to pay us back those debts. And so now the debts that don't sit on the central bank balance sheet and that sit in, you know, pension funds or individual savers or individual investors accounts, those are still honored. Maybe that would be a way to, you know, it would be inflationary and it would lead to the currency losing value. But that's, if I have to operate within their rules, that's one way to kind of get rid of this debt overhang that just kind of dominates everything now. The other thing that could potentially be done, and I've thought about this, but I haven't quite figured out how you could actually do it. But one thing you could do is you could potentially do a debt for equity swap on all the national debt. So in other words, if the Federal Reserve is holding the debt from the from the U.S. government, and the U.S. government represents all the citizens, and you could do this in all the countries, by the way, but theoretically, we owe it to ourselves, right? And this is the problem with this, though, is when you say we owe it to ourselves, somebody ends up having to eat the loss, and the person that ends up eating the loss is whoever holds the currency, because the currency loses value, right? But maybe there would be a way that you could take all the debt, swap it for equity, and so the balance sheet of the central bank is still in balance, but now we all own a piece of the equity in the United States. And then as we grow our way out of it, perhaps, and if the governments or if the U.S. starts performing better, maybe we get some kind of a tax credit on the growth. Again, I haven't figured this all out, and I'm not even sure it could be done. But there, if you're going to keep running the system as it is now, we are eventually going to have to deal with the debt. And there's a third way to do it too, and that is to just keep running the debt up. And this is going to drive people crazy. But part of the reason that we've been able to drive the debt up as far as we have, and we haven't had the cataclysmic crisis that so many people have predicted, is because, from one point of view, the government can spend whatever they want into existence. And the way that they control the... Now, people say that would be massive inflationary. And yes, it would be massive inflationary if you didn't drain some of that money back out. And so the way you drain the money back out is you have a tax rate, right? So if you print, I'm just going to make up a number. You have a budget deficit of $5 trillion, right? So you print $5 trillion, you spend it, that money goes into the economy, but then you take $2.5 trillion out in the form of taxes, right? And so I know that there's people out there just saying, this cannot be done. This is going to lead to disaster. Well, this is actually kind of the way it works already. This is the MMT, right? And I think people, when they hear the words MMT, their head kind of explodes and they can't even think rationally anymore, because they think that eventually it will lead to disaster. And I tend to agree. Eventually, I think it does lead to disaster. But it can take a long time before that happens. And that is part of the reason why we've been able to, quote unquote, get away with it for so long. Right. And the other part of the reason that we've been able to get away with it for so long is that there's such a huge demand for dollars outside the United States. So as long as the rest of the world still struggles with this euro dollar problem, the U.S. can get away with these fiscal policies, you know, these huge budget deficits, these huge trade deficits, because there is still demand for the currency. And if you spend the money in existence, but then you destroy that money via taxation and bring it back, I think it could go on longer than people would like to admit that it could go on. So if I was having to work under their rules and under their desires and under the current system to kind of keep it going, I think that that could probably work for longer than most people think. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's what I would do.
Not at all. Completely lost. I'm kidding. One of the things that I think one of my favorite quotes, I think it's often misattributed to Churchill, is the quote, "If I had more time, I would have written you a shorter letter." And, yeah. You know, there's a lot of podcasts in the planet right now, and especially in the finance world. And a lot of these go, you know, 60, 90, sometimes 2 hours long. And so when it comes to us covering some of these really, really interesting topics, and you can really get into the granularities. For us to try to do this in 15 minutes, realize we're not covering every last aspect of our thoughts and all the nuances to these themes. The same goes for Twitter. What do you think you can achieve in 20 characters? You know, so take a step back, think about engaging this as a thought experiment, which is what we're generally doing when we record these videos. And I think it's a big part of doing the WWJD segment. Now, some of the things you were just talking about there, why I kind of referenced this Churchill quote, or the idea that, if we had more time, we would write you shorter letters, because we have written a lot of short letters in the different clips that we put together. On our Start Here playlist, we have one of my favorites, which is the Prisoners of the System clip. And there's one right next to it, When the Money Stops. Those two really go, I think, do a great job of going into the Eurodollar system and talking about some of these things, in particular, the MMT, Modern Monetary Theory. And one of the things that you've said before, which is it's descriptive of how the system works, not prescriptive of what the government could do to bail itself
right.
out of debts, etc. I mean, it's already how the system works. Now, one of the things that was kind of a learning experience for me, and I think a lot of people in the financial world, was this idea that QE was, you know, why wasn't QE hyperinflationary? And a lot of people learned that the idea of bank reserves and how what the Fed was doing with creating QT and pulling the collateral out of the system and then putting it into kind of a reserve account through which banks could lend on. In this particular conversation, you just mentioned the idea of somewhat forgiving these debts. And when talking about QE as not being inflationary because it's kind of sucking the collateral of the system and it's creating reserves, not money. In this particular case, when you forgive those debts, it's kind of like injecting that liquidity into the system and could potentially be hyperinflationary. And to kind of bring it all together with your dollar milkshake theory, if you did have some type of hyperinflationary event, that's where, and if you said many times, you don't think gold's going to be $5,000 because of decree. You think it's going to be because the market chooses in a free market environment, which is really the first part of your response, is going to take it there because no one's going to want the paper money. And I think, you know, we just had a discussion about Argentina this weekend. So I'm not sure if some of those points that I've brought up, if you want to comment on any of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's all kind of theoretical. Until somebody actually tries to do this, it's all kind of theoretical, right? And I guess the point I would get across is that the market in many ways doesn't work the way you think it should. And it's worth, and even if the market does work the way you think it should, there's always another interpretation. There's always two sides to every story. It's important to understand the other side of the story, because the other side of the story may help explain why the event that you think is going to happen hasn't happened yet. Doesn't mean that you're ultimately wrong. Maybe you will end up being right. But if you're wondering why your view, which you fundamentally believe will ultimately play out, if you're having to trouble figure out why it hasn't happened yet, try to understand the other side of the story. Even if you think the other person or the other side is just completely bonkers, if you actually take the time to try to understand it, it may answer your question. And that's what I've tried to do with the MMT thing. I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm an expert on MMT, but from the reading and the studying I've done, I've tried to put my own biases aside. I've tried to listen to what that side is saying and then look at the actual operations in the context of them potentially being right. And when you look at it from that perspective, it actually makes a lot of sense. And it doesn't mean that the result will be what they think it will be. And it doesn't mean that the result that you think should happen will ultimately be wrong. But it does help understand how things are currently playing out or are currently happening. And I would encourage people, as whenever you're in a conversation and somebody says something that drives you absolutely crazy and you want to pull your hair out, don't. That's when you actually need to open your mind and actually think about it, because that's where you might actually learn something. If somebody says something that triggers you and you immediately shut down, you're never going to learn anything new. And it may be that you learn something and then you reject it later. But if you have to be careful not to get triggered. And listen, I struggle with this myself. I have to, And this is why I ultimately, you know, this happened to me several years ago now, but, you know, I was somebody who thought the dollar just had to fall. And when it didn't, and when people would tell me why it hadn't fallen, I would get triggered. I'd say, no, it has to fall. But then finally, you know, I just said, okay, I'm clearly wrong here. What am I missing? And I tried to go to everything with an open mind. And there was a couple of steps along the way where I was like, that cannot be right. And but that's when I forced myself to kind of work through it. And when you allow yourself to do that, you're going to learn a lot.
Well, I think hopefully that's what people are getting from the conversations we have here. We're trying to take an open-minded, grounded approach. One of the things that it's kind of been a part of your Twitter celebrity is your ability to trigger people, not because you're trying to be a jerk, but because you've gone through the same learning experience yourself. And you realize the enlightenment that you've had by, you know, taking a step back from things that are making you emotional, trying to look at the other person's point of view and, you know, hopefully learn something throughout that whole process. So, you know, to wrap up here, you know, maybe bringing it back to the joke I started the conversation with, Brent, you know, if in a 12-month period, you had to either be the Fed chairman or shave your eyebrows, what would it be?
Well, you know, I am a little bit vain, so I may take the Fed chairmanship.
All right. Well, that's good to know. I think a lot was learned in this edition of WWJD, What Would Johnson Do? I appreciate those perspectives. Hopefully there's a lot learned for everyone viewing, and we look forward to having you join us in a future version of this segment and many of the others that we do. If you visit our YouTube channel, you'll see everything is broken down in the playlist, all the different segments. We do have unique thumbnails. This makes it very easy for you, no matter how you're coming across our videos, to know what type of video you're getting. So if you don't like the Madness Edition, you can avoid it. The peak of the week is really not of interest because you kind of already know what's happening in the week. You can avoid it. If you like the long form, deep dive, full length, you'll know how to find those. So we definitely appreciate you joining us. We value your time when you do decide to do that. So we want to make sure you know exactly the type of conversation you're getting. Brent, speaking of conversations, this was a phenomenal one. Thank you for joining us. And we'll see everybody here real soon in whatever segment we decide to throw at you next. This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.